This week on the Therapy Dogs Australia podcast, Sam discusses third parties, including the concerns some people have about the NDIS changes, its impact on animal-assisted therapists, and how that also differs from animal therapy. Enjoy.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to this week's episode of Therapy Dogs Australia podcast. Just me again today, sorry. Maxine is off doing fun things, so we had a guest planned for you. They had to reschedule to next week. So I thought this would be a really good opportunity to jump on, have a quick chat about some things that have been going on in the industry. It's caused a bit of a fuss, which is the NDIS. So it is October 2024. And what has happened is, Bill Shorten or whoever, I don't know, was in Parliament and said something about assistance dogs and the NDIS or whatever. And then someone got wind of that and started sending around emails and asking everybody to address it. That's fine. I think there was a misunderstanding generally within the industry that the comments that were made in that parliamentary whatever meeting or whatever they call it meant something for allied health providers and their service delivery, and then that escalated. So I'm not fully across every statement that's come out from whoever to do with whatever with the NDIS, but I've been working under the NDIS scheme for a few years. And one thing's for certain is that it's a mess. So it is very tricky to navigate. I rely on support coordinators and plan managers to navigate it because I'm a psychologist. So it's not my job to know all of the ins and outs. What my job is to provide psychological services to people that book in for the service. So we don't do NDIA stuff. We used to, but then that had too many barriers, so now we do self and plan manage, which I think most of you would be in a similar boat. I don't know, I think there's changes coming to that in the future, but anyway, for the time being, that's what most of us are probably doing. By most of us, I am referring to disability service providers who are typically going to be allied healths, so speech, OT, psych. Then we've got the group of, you know, some educators has got something to do with some of the NDIS service delivery and support workers. So there's been a bit of a fuss and a flurry over essentially nothing. So anyone who is providing a service through NDIS will be billing under a line. We don't even do that anymore. So I have had a number of conversations with NDIS support coordinators and plan managers who have asked us to change our invoices to reflect something else so that a participant's plan can cover the service. The answer to that is a resounding no, absolutely not. We don't change anything on our invoices. And that was happening so many times that I even took line numbers and stuff off. Especially, yeah, like there's a difference between in participants' plans. If you're working on, if you're listening to this, you're probably working under the NDIS and you know what I'm talking about. We offer psychology, or at our clinic, we're psychologists, or we've got a speech pathologist as well. And we offer our services. And if an NDIS participant is having and support coordinator or a plan manager, someone else taking care of their plan and invoices, that's fine. We can email it to them. But essentially at the end of the day, the participant is responsible for accessing the service and payment of the service. And if a third party is going to pay, cool. But it does bring, like Medicare, so it brings us into an area of dealing with third parties and the rules that they have. So my current third parties are Medicare, NDIS, and WorkCover, and DVA as well. So different rules for different third parties. Okay, and I'm obviously under APRA's rules as well, first and foremost, really. So when you're providing animal assisted therapy, everyone who's done our courses, particularly our clinical course, will already know this, which is why I didn't have a mad panic in my inbox, is because you guys all already knew what was going on with this, because we've discussed it. And we've also discussed during your course, we've discussed and all of our post-course supports, our group supervisions and stuff like that, we discuss these things. But essentially where the confusion came from was animal therapy. If, you know, we can separate that from animal assisted therapy. Animal therapy appears to be what the NDIS is targeting. And what they mean by that is animal experiences. So that's, you know, that animal assisted activities stuff, which is, you know, patting the dog because you like dogs, patting the horse because you like horses. You want to, you know, improving quality of life, that sort of thing. I'm all for animal therapy and animal activities, animal experiences and things like that. I do think that NDIS should consider value in services like that because of the quality of life and community access that it provides, similar to how NDIS will consider other experiences that they'll fund as well. But we all know, if you don't know, you've been living under a rock, that the NDIS is tightening up on things because obviously they've spent a lot of money and the whole thing's a mess. There's not enough accountability, et cetera, et cetera. So the people who are running those services, they should have been being billed under something relevant to that. So whether it's community access or quality of life type stuff, that's what those services are for. Animal assisted therapy is something different. So that's a therapeutic modality provided by a professional who's trained in their field. So an evidence-based modality that you would be using as a professional in your field. It's easiest for me to talk about psychology because I don't know enough about the others. That's assisted by the dogs, horses, goats, walk around the park, etc. So what that means is that I'm using an already approved evidence-based modality of therapy. Now, CBT is my jam. I really enjoy CBT. I find it very successful and useful and all those things. And it's got a really, really strong evidence base. And it's approved by APRA, Medicare, DVA, WorkCover, whatever. So it's a really safe one, right, for me to use. There's some other therapies out there that people use that are also, you know, approved, but maybe aren't as widely accepted by all of the third parties. And in that case, you need to be aware, very, very aware of who is paying for the session, what the client goals are, and how does your modality stack up in terms of its evidence base for those goals. So the clients that I see, CBT is a good fit, and it fits all the third parties. So easy, right? Okay, lucky for me. Animal assisted therapy is the animal assisting me to provide a therapeutic intervention under a CBT framework. So cognitive behavioral therapy is CBT framework. It doesn't replace CBT. It assists. So in the same way that having Play-Doh in the room, because some of my kids like to interact with Play-Doh and build things out of Play-Doh during the session, I can't just play with Play-Doh for the session. It's not Play-Doh therapy. That's not The idea is that the Play-Doh is a tool or a object or whatever. It's just something that we can use, and it kind of helps facilitate the rest of the work that we've got to get done. Now, you can say that about anything. You look in any, I work primarily with kids, you look in any child psychologist's therapy room, and there's crap everywhere. So we've got board games, we've got paint, craft boxes, we've got Uno cards, we've got the amount of colouring in books I've got. I must have about 7,000 Connect pens, because kids love to colour with Connect pens, not crayons, which I hate. So I obviously have some crayons as well so that I can use the crayons. I do not like the sensory feedback of colouring in with textures at all, but all my kids love it and it irks me. But anyway, and they use up all my pens. That's why I have 10 billion pens. Anyway, so we have all that stuff, right? So it's like the NDIS coming along and saying, well, Play-Doh in your sessions is not evidence-based. Well, no duh. Like, it's not meant to be. That's not meant to be a thing. What it is it's just a tool that facilitates us to have this discussion and do this learning and whatever. Sometimes with kids, we need to do first and then activities, and it's all about engagement and rapport and all that sort of stuff. Now, animal-assisted therapy got itself probably in a bit of trouble because it's got a name. It's like Lego therapy. If you've heard of Lego therapy, it is so fun. You should do it. You can Google that. But it's like, we don't just do Lego therapy and be like, yeah, here's Lego therapy, because it's not its own thing. It's just a thing that we do to help us facilitate another skills training, which is social skills, which I can easily fit all that under a CBT framework. Easy. Okay. So anyway, animal-assisted therapy is ass animals assisting in therapy. So it's therapy assisted by animals. Sorry that I'm saying this so many times. You're probably like kicking your dashboards in, to quote Pat Stewart, but if you're kicking your dashboard in listening to this, same. And it is ridiculous to have to say it so many times. But unfortunately, there was a little bit of a flurry over nothing, because it is ridiculous to think that the NDIS could tell me that you, being a psychologist, but also being having a dog in the room, oh, that's unacceptable. We can't do it. No, we just won't fund it. First of all, they wouldn't even know. How would they know? All right. So we understand it's an assisted therapy. So you're not just selling, you really should not be marketing that you're just selling animal experiences. That's not good. We've had parents contact us being like, can we trick our child into coming to therapy by telling them that they're coming to learn dog training or something like that? And I'm like, no, you can't do that. Even though that is a very sneaky trick and maybe it would work, ethically, we can't do that. So, no. But what we can do is, have an initial session, gather information, blah, 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 and have a good experience because there's an animal here and your child loves animals and whatever. Okay. So, the stress and confusion should not have impacted any of the allied health professionals who are billing under their scope of practice. So if you're a speech therapist, you're billing for speech therapy. You're not billing for animal-assisted speech therapy. It's not a thing. If you're an OT, you're billing under your OT. You're not billing animal-assisted OT. It just doesn't work like that. If you're a counselor, you're a counselor, whatever it is, other allied health, whatever it is. So it's just not the case. That, and it should not never have become part of the discussion that we would be losing support from NDIS. It's just silly. And if that was the discussion that was happening, which from what I've seen, it wasn't, but if that was the discussion that was happening, the response to that should be, stuff you, NDIS, don't tell us what to do and how to do our jobs. We're using evidence-based practice because we're psychologists and social workers and whatever, and we're operating under our frameworks that we've been trained in to assist the participant goals that your participants have. So, what do you care? Like, if we've got Play-Doh or Uno or Lego or a dog, who cares? It's about pursuing client goals, improving functioning. We can't do that. We can't do our jobs without tools. End of the story. So how to navigate this moving forward? One, understand it and stand up for it. Like stand up for like, that's not me. That doesn't affect me. I don't know what NDIS is talking about with their animal activities rampage that they're on. They seem like jerks for that. Like, no, do I think every NDIS participant should have animal activities in their plan? No, I don't. Absolutely not. Do I think NDIS should be paying for every single thing? No, I don't at all. We will go broke. So no, I don't think that that's reasonable or achievable by the NDIS, which clearly we've seen it's not. But for some people who animal experiences would be absolutely beneficial for them underneath suitable goals, such as community access and quality of life. Absolutely, absolutely. There are some people living with disabilities who are in full-time supported living arrangements and don't have access to typical outings that people who aren't living in those circumstances can access. Like they don't have people that are taking them out to the local petting zoos and stuff like that. They don't have people that are paying for them for stuff like that, you know? And I do think absolutely some of those people are 60 years old, you know, and they've been living in care for 40 something years. Absolutely. I think that animal experiences should be included in their plan. I think the NDIS is a huge jerk if they take it out of there. Is it required for everybody? No. Should it cost an arm and a leg? No. So if animal experiences is something that is included in the plan, I think it should be included and charged out appropriately because there are other expenses that are involved in that sort of stuff too. Typically, there's going to be some kind of carer or support worker that's chaperoning and travel if it's not already included. So already to give people quality of life experiences, there's a budget that needs to be considered to make that accessible. And then the actual service, it's like, you know, the animal experience, it's not being provided by a health professional. There's no specific professional training or, you know, whatever. Animals are expensive. Don't get me wrong. I know all about that. But it's not a specialized situation. Individual appointments that need to be booked. Sure. Like that's probably, a bigger expense on a business, absolutely. But yeah, anyway, I won't go hugely down that rabbit hole because I do believe in animal experiences as being appropriate for people under the NDIS, certain participants under the NDIS. Yes, I do. The rest of us that aren't doing that are doing animal-assisted therapy, which means that you're doing your therapy assisted by whatever animal. I've got dogs, I've got horses, I've got goats, chickens, whatever. Doesn't matter. And I'm not under any obligation. So when I do farm appointments, I'm not under any obligation to provide access to any specific animal. We do whatever the client participant will find useful for them on the day. Sometimes it's no animals. Sometimes there are no animals involved at all. There's no reason to involve any animals. Sometimes we could just go for a walk around the paddocks. There's, you know, we're walking around animals, but there's no animals really specifically involved. And the reason that we do that is because a lot of people are more comfortable talking when they're walking, and there's some research behind that. So, yeah, that's why we do that. It's for a reason. So I don't think we need to get so worked up over it. And if we were going to get so worked up over it, then we'd be coming in pretty strong, educating the NDIS on what it is that we're doing, and helping them to understand that this is as ludicrous as if they were to tell us that we were going to be removing our Lego sets from our therapy rooms. Because I tell you right now, that's not happening. So, you know, I'm not taking out my board games and my puzzles and my connector pens either. So how about calm down and the tools of the trade are the tools of the trade. We get to decide what they are as long as we are working under our evidence-based frameworks for our therapeutic intervention. So that being said, the question of dealing or working under third parties is a great question. This is something that we discuss, you know, a fair bit like I just mentioned before. The probably take-home message for all of you clinicians out there, it's something that I've really learned over the last, I don't know, 5 years or something like that. How long's NDIS been out? And Medicare, I mean, like, what's okay. So here we go. I'll tell you a story. When I first started out, I believe that Sunny and I might have been the first team in Queensland that I know of, and that anyone else I in the networks knew of, that were out doing psychology assisted by canine. So this is about 11 or 12 years ago. And it was super new. So because it was new, I really sort of felt like I had to educate people on what it was and what I was doing. And, you know, everyone asked the question, what does the dog do, et cetera, et cetera. And I felt like there was a lot of focus on the dog. And so I had to really, like all my case notes and my reports and things like that, I was talking about the dog a lot, like I was justifying it. That's the word. I felt like there was a lot of justification for the dog because it was so new, right? So, and everywhere we went, I worked in a few different workplaces. Everywhere we went, people, you know, asking questions and blah, blah. And that's how, so other psychologists, and I was in a school and I was in a headspace and I was in a private practice. So other psychologists and other staff and whatever would be asking about their dog, like I can bring my dog, and I'd be like, no, you gotta like get trained and da da da, because it's like all this training that goes with it, rah rah. And they'd be like, oh well, nah, it's too far to travel, blah blah blah. And I was like, this won't do. Anyway, that's how Therapy Dogs Australia started, is because I was like, this won't do. Like all these people up here in Queensland that want to do the same thing, they can't just do it without the training. And so that's how Therapy Dogs Australia started, which started out first of all as just little intro workshops. When I was just I just made these little workshops just to explain to people, like, I know you're interested, but you've got to go and do like the full training, but this is what it is, like, you know, just fully explain what it is and all that sort of stuff, which we still run the intro workshop to this day. And it's like not out of date, which is crazy. It gets updated, obviously, but the bones of it are the same. And then I went and became a qualified dog trainer, so that I could actually help people do the full training. And here we are now. So over the course of that last 11 or 12 years or whatever it's been, the need for me to justify the dog has significantly changed. So therapy dogs now are like so common, whereas like they were not at all before. Like they had story dogs existed, Delta dogs existed, but therapy dogs as we know them, as like in schools and allied health and all that, it was not a thing. So I don't need to justify it now. So I was explaining to GPs, I was explaining to the public, the PHNs, it was ATAPs back then, explaining stuff to them, blah, blah, blah. I was just explaining it everywhere I went. That you guys don't have to do that now. Well, you do a little bit. But the precedent's been set, like, you know, especially if you're like in a school or, you know, allied health private practice, like you'd be like, oh, well, like every other practice has got a dog. Like every other school's got a dog. Like, you know, it's obviously a thing. So what I learned through a couple of experiences is that it's not actually about, you know, justifying like, oh, the dog's so great because they do all these things. It's more, that's not what your third party cares about. It's more about explaining and qualifying that the therapy animal has not detracted anything. That's the main goal, concern, issue. The dog being here has not stopped me from doing my job. That needs to be case noted. So there are lots of sessions where my dogs do a meet and greet out in the waiting room. People are happy to see them. They come in, the dogs jump up on the couch, get a pat, whatever, da da da. They do all that meet welcome stuff, and then they fall asleep and that's it. And they're not really involved in the rest of the session. That's very typical for therapy dogs. So in those sessions, I case note that And I'll case note any value that came from the dog being present. So that'll be things when my clients say things like, "You love me, don't you, Nala?" And I'm always so happy to see you, Oliver. And they say something pro-social, or they say something relationshipy about the dog, or they say hello to the dog, they make a comment about the dog or whatever. And I'll case note like, okay, so I've got a little therapy dog section in my note template, and I'll go, dog present, Oliver, welcome Pats, client asks dog to sit on the couch beside them, not otherwise involved, things like that. So the reason that I do that, and then I go on to write the rest of my case note, which is all of my typical stuff. So like, my client summary observations, blah, 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 what interventions were provided. And those are CBT interventions typically. So I have an AAT section in my notes, in my template. So what goes in there, my farm template's a bit different. But what goes in there is anything that the dog assisted in, the notes about how the dog was beneficial go in there. So my clinical note on the therapeutic modality that's evidence-based that was used, that's in its own section. And then the AAT note is beneath that, and it's just got extra notes about, the client wouldn't do the activity until that we said that Nala wanted to do it. Whatever. Like, there'll be stuff like that that happens all the time. Client refused to do the worksheet until we filled in the worksheet for Nala first, and then the client filled in their worksheet, like stuff like that. Or also what goes in there is observations that I make about the relationship. Anything remarkable. So anything that I think is interesting. So some people have really quite strange interactions with the dog sometimes, and I don't always know what the go is, but I'll make a note of it. So if I think it's, got potentially some kind of clinical observation value, I'll make a note. I've got like clients that there's like weird relationships, like potentially attachment stuff, certainly social skills stuff, and yeah, just kind of over time, like make little observations and note those things down. I'm not reading into it, like the client said this to the dog and they have anxious attachment and da da da, like, I'm not making huge claims and allegations, but if I develop a pattern in the observations, then maybe that's become something that's more relevant. And then that might be something that ends up in a report. But the rest of the stuff typically won't end up in a report. So particularly, so I don't even bother, like Medicare, mental health care plans, succession reports, like I'm not going into a heap of detail in those. It's very basic. So I don't even bother. Whereas I used to have this full on whole paragraph about how, like, we're an animal assisted therapy practice, and that means that the therapy dog assists us to provide evidence-based therapy. I nearly had that off by heart. I could pull it up, I'm sure. Anyway, so blah, blah, blah. As you know, we did. And that's when I was doing back marketing to the GP. So that's another point. So that's private prac allied health. Your report back to the GP is a back marketing tool as well. So I would just like drop it in there. So they'd be like, "What the hell's animal assisted therapy?" And I'd have like a little blurb about what it is, and the therapy dogs can sometimes assist us to, blah 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 blah. And we got heaps. Like we're a busy little practice. I think our practice is 10. What year is this? Maybe it's nine. It's nine or 10 this year. Well, our birthday's in March, so we're either 9.5 or 10.5. Anyway, but back in the day when I was trying to build it, yeah, that's what I was doing. Actually, that's our new practice. That my practice is even older than that because this is our new venue. Anyway, get distracted. Okay, so yeah, you can do that. You can do that back to the GP because they don't they're not Medicare, but you've got to be aware that that's a Medicare report. So, be careful that you're not making a huge deal out of the dog, because if you put too much focus on the dog or the horse or the goat in the reports or the notes or whatever, then essentially someone could come back and say, why are you just patting goats? Like, what are you doing? Like, why are you drawing all these inferences from this young person's interactions with a goat? There's no evidence about that being an appropriate place for you to draw clinical inferences about this client. Like, how much is this informed a diagnosis or treatment or whatever, when you're just watching people interact with your rabbits and now you think you know that they have an attachment disorder? Like, and that's very valid. That is very valid. So we don't have the research on that. So I'm preaching to the choir. I know psychologists know this. So sorry, everybody else, if you all know this too. I don't know what you guys know, but I know that psychologists will be like, yeah, duh. Because we are very careful about what we say about a client, because you have to be able to, like, we won't just say someone's a diagnosis. You have to be able to justify it. So unless you've done a formal assessment, then you don't just go willy-nilly around saying that people are narcissists or whatever. I know they do that in some places, hospitals. It's a BPD diagnosis. Sorry, shots fired. Okay. Just joking. So if you you probably got already all of you, social workers, counselors, speech, OT, educators, you're probably all exactly the same. I don't know, I didn't do your training. But I imagine it would be the same. So we're just really careful about what we say, of course, about clients. Like, it's a professional opinion, and we don't draw professional opinions from, like, I watched them play with the Lego and they did this to the Lego man, so now that means that they're a sociopath. It doesn't work like that. But what we can do is build a collection of observations, and then we can, make sort of recommendations, or maybe suggest a more formal assessment based off of the observations that we've made that sort of bring up this pattern that we've seen. And I might talk about, like, if someone was to ask me, particularly a parent, that would be where I would talk about the interactions that I've witnessed with myself, the dog, the fish tank, goat, whatever, the Lego, the whatever. This is the dolls, whatever it might be. This is the pattern that I've noticed, these are the observations that I've made. And so from that, I think it probably would be worthwhile to go down the route of assessment, formal assessment, blah, blah, blah. And we have psychometrics that do that. So, or we can do, like a formal interview, whatever. Okay. So the point of what I'm saying is, we can't put everything on to the interaction with the dog or the horse. That's just not how it works. They're just a tool. They're just a tool. Sorry, you're kicking your dashboard in again. In this context, the dog is a tool of my trade so I can do my job. I understand that people don't want to call the dogs tools, but I don't find that offensive at all. I think that's great. Like, excellent. My dogs are working dogs. I'm happy for them to be tools. That's excellent. It doesn't mean they're not my pets and my special babies and I love them more than life itself. But in the working context, the reason that they're there is because they're a tool of my trade. So, Medicare, NDIS, WorkCover, whoever, they don't care about how much you love your dog and you want to make its presence in the session justified over all this magnificent stuff that you've observed, and all these special heartfelt golden moments and da 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 da. They don't care about that at all. Sorry if that's hard to hear. They don't care about that. What they care about is that the client that they've paid for you to treat their psychological injury or their mental health disorder or their whatever, increase their capacity to function day-to-day life, they care about what they paid you, the professional, to do under your evidence-based frameworks. Now, that's what needs to be reflected in your notes, okay? And your reports. Anything aside, okay, aside from that, I too know the value of my dogs and my horses and whatever species in the sessions. I am on the same page as you. I totally get it. There's all these golden moments. It's beautiful. It's changing people's lives. I'm totally here for it. Happens for me too. I still see pretty much a full-time client load. I get it. Okay. That I'm totally on the same page. I get it. The third party doesn't care. Okay. So we just have to shelf that beautiful stuff that we see. If you want to put it in your notes, just put it as a like an adjunct, like put it in its own section as a this is something that you've observed. And don't put your interpretation, don't put a big interpretation on it. Any of your notes, I just can't believe I'm saying this. I'm so sorry if this is people are just like, of course, we know all this. This is a waste of my time. Whew. Although I will say, don't feel bad if you didn't know this, or hadn't applied this knowledge to this situation, because I know that there's actually a lot of information out there that is sounding very different to this, and it is wrong. So I feel quite comfortable saying that. That's a bold statement. Everyone else is wrong, and I am right. So I've been right for a long time, actually. Been teaching people this for a really long time. And the NDIS has just been a really great example of like exactly what I've been talking about. I've been through this with not the NDIS. I've been through this with other third parties before. That's how I know. That's how I know it, because I've had this conversation more than once with more than one other third party, because I've been doing this for a long time. And I used to put all this stupid shit in my notes, or reports or whatever, and people can ask questions because they're like, what is this nonsense that you're doing? And I'd have to re and then I would have to go back and really explain. Like I've had people like denied services, and I've got to go back and be like, what are you talking about? There's I'm a psychologist. And they're like, oh, well, what's all this nonsense? And I'm like, well, I don't know, my dogs are just really cute and people love them and it makes them happy. And they're like, shut up. Not exactly how a conversation is went, obviously, but similar. Okay. And I have to really justify, no, the dog's, it's okay, the dog's just there. Like, no. And I felt myself, like back to my earlier story that I don't think I finished. I was over justifying, like the dog being there is this big, huge deal, and it's so great, and blah, 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 blah. And then the third parties were like, you sound like an idiot, so none of this is worth our money. And I had to backflip and be like, oh, okay. So what I actually meant was that I'm a psychologist. And they're like, oh, okay, keep talking. And I'm like, oh, okay. And also my dog, sometimes people pat it and it can help engagement. And I'm doing CBT. They're like, right. Haven't thought about that in a while. Actually did have to have those conversations a number of times. That's how I knew this. I thought I just knew it. Anyway, no, I didn't. It's happened to me. Okay, cool. So, moving forward, don't make a big deal out of it. Don't make a big deal out of it in your notes. Don't make a big deal out of it in your reports. So I've actually removed the animal assisted therapy stuff from my Medicare reports, because my GPs in my area all know what we do. Mad word of mouth, like we're good. We've got plenty of clients, like especially like over the recent years, it's slowed down a bit now. We can breathe. But we were absolutely just like everybody else, had a 12-month wait list. And my NDIS stuff removed as well. Some support coordinator once told one of my participants that I had it like animal stuff in the report. And the support coordinator told the participant, oh, the NDIS won't even read this. Like it's nonsense. And I was like, that's ridiculous because I'm a psychologist and I wrote it. What I had in there was only basic, like basic stuff, even then, like it was basic. But most of that's been removed now. So the only time something goes in a report is if it's really remarkable. So an example of that would be things like aggressive behavior towards animals, or really, really significant disengagement and refusal. Where I'm like, mate, like this participant needs a significant amount of funding, And that's when I've got in my reports things as well, like animal experiences are going to be key for this participant to access the community. Like we need more animals is the only thing that motivates this person. But we need more of that. So, we need to keep doing what we're doing. We need to do it regularly, and we need other people on board as well doing the animal experience stuff so that this person leaves their house. Stuff like that. Choose your own adventure. It's your own journey. You've all got your own bodies and people that you're answering to. But that's what I've learned along the way is it is far more important to be noting that your dog has not prevented you from doing your job. I know it sucks because I too was writing it like hit all the ways that the dog, blah, blah, blah. That's not to say that I'm not adding in when the dog is significant in the session. I'm definitely adding that in. I can't think of any examples right now, but I'm definitely adding in. Mine are usually things, it's usually some kind of engage. Sometimes it's a learning thing, sometimes it's a pro-social behavior. Anyway, I can't think of a specific example, so I won't bother. But I'm definitely always adding that stuff in when the dogs have been definitely involved because I do think it's important. A, it's your notes, you have to, but B, I do think it's important to show if you ever did have an issue and your notes were audited, to show that the dog has brought value. I do think that's important, absolutely. So I will write those things in there where the client is specifically saying, I missed you, Nala, or whatever. I also write down, so for if whatever reason my dog's not at the session, I will, and the clients will always say something like, oh, where's Nala today? I was really looking forward to seeing her. This just feels so different without the dogs here. I will always write that. In the notes, I'll write down when parents say, the only reason they agree to come here is because the dogs, sorry to offend you. They always say that. Sorry, they don't, sorry, it's not about you. They just want to see the dogs. And I'm like, yeah, I've been hearing that for over a decade. It's fine. Doesn't hurt my feelings. I'm only here for the dogs as well. Yeah, so I will definitely case note all of those things because that's like a justification for, okay, so this is why we do this. Because the other thing that I'm balancing is the justification of the expenses of my tools. So the tools cost a lot of money to maintain, and that needs to be justified. I need the tools. So that's a part of the conversation. But then my third party payers don't, they need to know that I don't need the tools, obviously, because I can do my job. I'm doing my job. Like it's, I'm not doing animal experiences. I'm doing my job as a psychologist. But I also need the tools and they're expensive. So, now we're in a, anyone that's an adult, I shouldn't say that. You know that adult thing that you have to do where you try and keep your salary down so that you reduce your tax, obviously. But then you want to borrow money. And so you need your salary up to get lending power, but then you're paying all this tax. So then you want your salary down to reduce the tax, but then you've got no lending power. It's like that. It's this balancing act between I need the tools and they're expensive, but to the third party, it's obviously I'm a psychologist and I'm just doing my job and the tools are just here, like my box of Lego or my multiple 10 billion connector pens, which are also expensive. They're tools that I need to do my job, but I'm still doing my evidence-based modalities of my job. So, yeah. Catch what I'm throwing. So, I hope that's helpful. I don't know if I've said just a lot of nothing. But yeah, your case noting, we can have a further, we discuss this stuff more. Let me know if you've got questions, actually. You guys can email us questions, email me, sam@therapydog.com.au, if you've got follow-up questions on this, because I will answer them, because I'm just like having a bit of a rant today and I'm unsupervised by Maxine. So it's not my fault. I think it's important to talk about this stuff, because I know that there's been a bit of a flurry. Can't think of a better word going on out there. Really important. Don't overstate the dog. Don't draw massive conclusions from interactions that you've seen with an animal. Don't draw massive conclusions about a person over interactions that you've seen with an animal, but certainly make observations and identify patterns. And we can use those observations and patterns as content for us to bring up to work on with the client or participant. If that's something that's related to their goals, that's basically animal-assisted therapy described. But yeah, certainly in your reports and things, I wouldn't be saying things like the client doesn't pat the horse, so they're sociopath. Like I'm obviously making up something ridiculous. But yeah, same. I hope you understand what I mean by that, because we don't have the evidence for that. We can make observations and recommendations, identify patterns, and request or suggest further assessment. What else? Did I say? Yeah, but I'm definitely putting in the notes where things have been re remarkable. They have been important. They have been significant. I can see that we've achieved something only because of the impact of the animal or the interaction with the animal or the activity with the animal. And I know that because, I've attempted whatever without the animal and it didn't work, or yeah, throughout a convers whatever, throughout a conversation with the participant or whatever, we've identified that this is what is going to motivate them. But at the same time, it's totally fine if the animals were totally useless. It's fine. That's fine, as long as they don't detract, as long as you've still got a full case note on your session, because you still did your session even though your dog was asleep, even though the horses walked off and they're just doing whatever, you've still got a session that you've done because you're a professional and you're a therapist or an educator, and the person has come to you for their mental health or education goals, and you've provided them a mental health or education intervention, regardless of whether or not you had animals there. I do think it's wise to write down how involved the animal was, something I used to not do. It's making note of when the animals really weren't involved, like not otherwise involved. Greeting, blah, blah, blah. Maybe they said something, not otherwise involved. And then the rest of your note detailing the rest of your evidence-based intervention. Okay, I think I have covered enough and derailed conversation enough for now. So what I'm going to do is leave it there, and you guys can email me with questions. And if we get some questions through, I will address them in a part two of this discussion. Have fun out there, guys. Yeah, don't stress right now. And when it comes time that someone says something silly like, we won't be able to have our animals in the sessions, I don't think it'll be from a funding perspective. I don't think that will be what causes it, because it doesn't cost Medicare any more or less for me to have animals in the session. It doesn't cost NDIS any more or less for me to have animals in the session. I don't think that's where it will come from. I think it will come from a regulation point of view when someone's dog bites someone and someone's horse kicks someone. I think that's where it'll come from. And that's when we'll have to really band together and make a point of saying like, okay, but we get it. Like, that's bad. But do we all have to be cancelled because someone's horse kicked someone? Or someone's dog bit someone. Let's have a discussion about that. And that's when we'll be discussing all of the things that we do to manage those risks. And when we look at the risk benefit analysis, that's where all of you will be drawing together, coming together and being able to discuss why you think it's worth the risk to have these animals present in these contexts and how you've mitigated those risks. Hopefully that doesn't happen, but I think if we get cancelled, it'll be because of that, not because of a funding thing. All right, have a great week, and we'll be back with a guest, hopefully. I've been trying to organise for a while. People are so busy. But yeah, have a great week. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. If you're interested in studying with Therapy Dogs Australia, or you have a few more questions before deciding, please get in touch with us by emailing courses@therapydog.com.au or visiting our website at www.therapydog.com.au for more information and FAQs.